If everyone could find their way to their seats, we're going to go ahead and get started. Thank you all for being here today at the School for Successful Ranching. My name is Lauren Decker, and I'm going to be moderating the session today. If you could, take a look at your cell phones and put them on silent or vibrate if you can. If you'd like to remove your hats, that's probably courteous for the folks behind you. There's a table in the back if you want to put them there, or you can put them right there at your side. We'd like to thank our sponsors this afternoon for the School for Successful Ranching. They have a booth set up in the back if you want to stop outside and say hello and thank you. We'd appreciate it because we can't do this program without them. The sponsors are Capital Farm Credit, Dow AgroSciences, Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Merck Animal Health, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, Bayer, Micro, Diacero, Texas Range Minerals, Neogen GeneSeq, Rabo AgriFinance, Texas Beef Quality Assurance, and Sylvius Insurance Group. If you're a new TSERA member, tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock, they'll be having a new member orientation in room 101. We'd like to invite everybody who is a new TSERA member to join us for that. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to Georgie Rosal, who is going to introduce our speaker for this session. Thank you all again for being here today.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is my pleasure to be here. I think any day that you can work in cowboy boots and jeans is a good day. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Jackie Davey. Jackie is an estate and succession planning specialist with Lincoln Financial Agricultural Business Services. She began her career in this industry about 17 years ago. Quickly learned that she had a passion for helping agribusiness owners and families. Her planning is a planning-centric practice. It brings creative design ideas to the table to protect the assets and preserve the ranching heritage for future generations. Jackie is a member of the TSCRA as well as the NCBA. She is the past president of the Texas Coastal Cattlewomen. She has been a speaker for, I think this is your fourth time, Jackie, at the convention. She now serves as the vice president of beef promotion and education for the association. She understands that hard work that's involved in being a good steward of land and livestock. I have worked with Jackie for the past 17 years. I look forward to working with many of you in the future, and I hope that you enjoy the presentation. One last thing before Jackie gets started, I want to make sure we're going to be playing a bingo game during the presentation. Did I catch every one of you and gave you one of those? Okay, I'll go to the back. Thank you very much.
Y'all hear me? Is this loud enough? Good. All right. So today we're going to be playing the game show of life, and we're going to talk about everybody's favorite topics, death, taxes, and family, right? So we know that we can't choose, we're all going to die, we don't have a choice in that, we don't have a choice in family, but hopefully we have a choice in how much taxes we pay or how much our family pays. So, like Georgie said, you have a celebrity bingo card there. At the end of each section, I'm going to just give you a little trivia question on a celebrity who made a planning mistake that either cost their family time, money, or both. Go ahead and take a sticker, put it on that person's face, and if you have five in a row at the end of our presentation, you will be winning our gift basket today. So, these are just the disclosures, so if you want, I'll print this out, and anybody who can't get to sleep tonight, you can read through those. We're going to start with my all-time favorite game show, Family Feud, and how to avoid one in your family. So, I think everybody can relate to this story. There's a glass punch bowl, the only time you see it is at Christmas with eggnog in it. No one thinks anything about it. But as soon as that person passes away, what becomes the most important thing in the world that people are willing to go to war over? That stupid glass punch bowl. My family right now, my grandmother is 96. She used to be a painter, and her children have already started arguing about a painting she did. We don't know who it's going to because she's never expressed her wishes, but there's a family feud brewing. It's going to get ugly. So survey says, what percentage of American adults currently say that they have estate documents such as a will or trust? 42% say they have these documents. That means the other 58% don't have these documents. It's amazing. I know that most people can't believe that, but I was at NCBA in Phoenix in February. I met a rancher from Wyoming. Net worth is $20 million. You can't hear me? I'm sorry. $20 million net worth, and he had no will. It's so foreign, I just can't understand it. But worse, you know, almost as bad as having an old will or an invalid will. Again, my grandmother, it took us years to train her to stop writing in the margins of her will and then crossing it out and arrows, and it was a diagram. The term for dying without a will is called intestate. It sounds like a bad disease, but that's exactly what it is dying intestacy. So what can happen if you die without a will? First, a probate court decides how your property is going to be distributed by the intestate laws of that state. Every state has different formulas, and I'm going to show you a couple differences so you can kind of get a feel for it. Every state has their own intestate laws and formulas for how they would separate your property. They do not take into consideration any unique situation. I've seen a couple of individuals who have been advanced their inheritance. One, it was to pay for some treatment, for some addiction treatment, and one, they had fertility problems, and their parents advanced them their inheritance. If you don't have a will, the probate court doesn't know this, and so you could potentially have somebody who already received their inheritance during life receiving a second inheritance, and you can imagine the problems that would cause. They don't take into consideration your family relationships. They don't care if you have an estranged son who you haven't talked to in 10 years. That son's going to get the same amount as every other heir. But not all property passes intestate. So remember, if what we're talking about, and when we're talking about property that passes intestate, is property that would normally pass via your will, because this is dying without one. Property that does not pass is any property in a living trust. That's going to go via the terms of the trust. Trusts are a great tool for individuals who own property in multiple states. So we started working with a gentleman who had property in 4 states. He had a home in Minnesota where he started out, a house in Texas because his job moved him there for a while, a house in Kansas when they moved him to Kansas, and he and his wife had bought a property in South Carolina that they were planning to retire to. All that property was owned in his name. What happens if he dies? Now his family is probating in 4 states. 4 states. Let's say each, for administrative costs, court filings, letters, testamentary, let's say it's $5,000 each state. His family just paid $20,000 and God knows how much time and heartache, because the property was owned in his name. We put it into a living trust. Now he passes away. He still has 4 properties in 4 states, except the only place he has to probate his will is the state in which he died. Life insurance proceeds. Life insurance proceeds pass income tax-free, and if owned properly, estate tax-free as well. These pass via a beneficiary designation. They do not flow through your will. It's the only asset that has those two. Funds in your IRAs, 401ks, any type of retirement account, those two pass via beneficiary designation, so they completely bypass the will. Payable on death accounts. This is simply a bank account that says, I, Jackie, when I die, this account is payable to you. And the bank knows that. The bank has that second person's name on the account, and so we don't have to get court documents that say, yes, you can have this account. And property that's owned jointly with someone else. Part of this can pass via intestate. It depends on the property and how it's titled, but some of it will just pass to the surviving spouse or the survivor of joint owner. So does everybody now know how theirs would pass? You have to think about it. Hopefully you've looked at your ownership and your titling and everything is correct. So what's the price of dying intestate? The spouse may not get enough. So there are some intestate formulas that will give the spouse only half of the assets and the children get the rest. So what happens if the spouse doesn't get enough? Now I have mom having to go to her kids and ask for money. No consideration of special needs. We have a client with an adult son who's a special needs child. We had to rearrange assets. So everything that he gets, he cannot get outright. There's a trustee on it, which are his siblings, because if he got a lump sum distribution, we know that he would buy a train. He sends me pictures of trains every week, all week. No distribution of specific assets to specific recipients. So this, again, you know, my grandmother, if she dies without a will or with an invalid will, she cannot name where that painting goes. So if you want your jewelry to go to someone, maybe you inherited it, that's where those specific bequests are made in the will. And the estate could shrink from fees and loss of value. We already talked about the cost of probating it. Having an administrator, paying an administrator. What if that administrator doesn't know the true value of the assets and they just want to sell it and settle it quick? They're not going to take into consideration what the true value is. And without heirs, the state could keep your assets. Now, this is very uncommon because if I don't have a spouse, I don't have living parents, I have no children, likelihood I have a distant cousin. The term heir is very loose. Anybody that is possibly blood related is considered your heir. So it's rare that the state gets everything, but if you don't have an heir, the state can keep your assets. So let's take a look at probating in dying intestate in three different states so you can get a feel for what the difference is. So this gentleman has a house that he bought with his wife that they own jointly. Okay, that is approximately $300,000. Then he also has land worth $1 million, ranch checking account around $50,000, cattle worth $250,000, and equipment around $60,000. That he owns individual. So those are his individual assets when he dies. Here's what the state of Texas says. You're his wife, you get the house. You also get half of the individual assets. And then your children get the rest. So in this example, the children have now inherited $907,000 and the wife has inherited $753,000. Do we really think it was his intention for his children to inherit more than his wife? But this is the formula that the state goes by when you die intestate. In Texas. It does matter also if this is his second wife and these kids are from his first wife, because then she gets less and the kids get more. Now, let's see what happens in Oklahoma. Same assets, same family. Now, she gets half and the kids get half. It's split evenly. Maybe that's okay with everybody. But, you know, I don't know if she can live on that. I haven't. Now we have Louisiana. Louisiana's always a little bit different. And I can say that I was born there. But we always have to be just a little bit different. In Louisiana, she gets to use the assets. She gets use of them for her life in what's called a usufruct account. But it's the kids who get everything. She doesn't. She just can use it. Are you beginning to see how dying without a will can be a problem for the family, and it can be a problem for not how things will not pass how you want them to pass. All right, bingo question. Ready? What singer died in the state of Minnesota at the age of 57 intestate without a will? His estate was valued at between $100 and $300 million, and it went to his six siblings. That would be Prince. It took a year for the judge to decide that his sister and five half-siblings were his heirs. And he wasn't close to all of them. So that's just one example of an idiotic mistake. All right, so now we're going to move on to another really fun one, which is the newlywed game. I think everybody remembers this one. Bob Eubanks would ask questions to see how well the spouses knew each other. This is, how many of you, if I ask right now, does your will give everything to your spouse and then it goes to the children? Okay? Nothing could go wrong, right? Let's talk about what can go wrong. First, this is what's called a simple will or an I love you will, because it's all sweet. We love our spouse. It goes to them and then it goes to the children, and it's easy breezy. It doesn't name, there's no declaration of guardianship in a simple will. So, you and your wife die simultaneously in a plane crash. Your parents want the kids, his parents want the kids, and now the grandparents are going to court and suing one another for custody of your children. But this is a much more common planning mistake that can happen from these wills. So we have husband number one up here in the top left corner, and that's his beautiful wife. All right? He has everybody on this has a simple will. He passes away, everything goes to her. But you can see how pretty she is, and you can see the neighbor who's been mooning over her over the fence for years. They get married now. She dies, everything goes to her spouse. Well, that's her spouse. It's her second spouse, but that's her spouse. So now, all the assets she inherited just went to him. He dies with his own simple will, and the mugshot-looking son at the bottom right has now inherited all this gentleman's assets, but who didn't get anything? The original children from that marriage. So it's a very simple will. And that's why they call it a simple will. But I don't think it always accomplishes what you want it to accomplish. It can be very dangerous to have these types of old wills. One thing that we can do is that things can go into trust for the wife. Says she can use it. It supports her health, her welfare. And then it goes to my children. Not future husband's children. It goes to these children. So that's just one thing that can happen with a simple will. This isn't a lesser emotional issue, but one that's still important, and the fact that a simple will does not give you the ability to use what's called your lifetime exemption amount. Right now, a lifetime exemption amount is the amount that you can pass estate tax-free. Anything above that exemption is taxed at the 40% estate tax rate. Right now, thanks to the law that was signed in December, each person can pass $11.2 million estate tax-free, so that's $22.4 million per couple. Anything above that would be taxed at the 40% rate. Now, best case scenario is that we have that new tax law and all the way through 2025. In 2026, it comes back to 2017 rate. Best case, we have it for the full 8 years, okay? But during this 8 years, Congress is going to turn over. We're going to have a presidential election, and I don't trust them. So I don't know best case 8 years, worst case probably 2 to 3 years, depending on the way all these elections go. So a simple will doesn't allow us to use that lifetime exemption amount because it doesn't have what's called bypass language, bypass trust. Okay? Here we have a gentleman with a $20 million estate. at his death, the exemption amount, the part that we can up to 11.2, is going into what's called a bypass trust. The rest of it is going to go into a marital trust, so 8.8. Okay? The wife has use of these assets. She can spend all 8.8 and start spending the 11.2, but that bucket over there is the first one she's going to spend. Okay? At her death, now in this example, I've just assumed a 5% growth rate. So the 11.2, you see that it's grown to 16.5. All of that goes tax-free to the kids. The marital trust over here has grown to 12.28. We take her exemption amount from that because she hasn't used hers. That was his. She gets 11.2 of this, goes tax-free, and only the balance is taxed. So in this case, yeah, the kids still owe about $720,000 in taxes. But without this technique, if this $20 million had grown to $30 million, they owe about $1.7 million. And that's just by a couple paragraphs in the will that says, at my death, I am sending assets to a bypass trust and a marital trust. What does this do? This also keeps her from sending assets to her second spouse's children. Does anybody have any questions about that? Okay. So, our second bingo question then. So this is another singer. He passed away and left his estate to his common-law wife. Then she overdosed from heroin, and everything went to her parents. Jim Morrison. So his parents actually had to sue her family for half the royalties of the Doors. Her family retained the right to his image. So, you know, it's simple mistakes with big consequences. Okay, who wants to be a millionaire? I know we all do. At what age were you responsible enough to inherit millions of dollars? Raise your hand. 18? 20? 25? 30? Maybe? Okay, so you have a number in your head right now where you feel like you would have been responsible enough to manage millions or inherit millions. Now if I ask it to you this way, tell me if that number changes. At what age were your kids, or do you feel your kids are responsible enough to inherit millions? Did that number just go up? Do you all recognize this gentleman, Philip Seymour Hoffman? He's an actor. He was in Moneyball, Charlie Wilson's War. He was so afraid of making his kids trust fund babies that he left trusts completely out of his estate planning documents. Well, that decision cost his family $12 million in estate taxes. Not very smart. Here's what a trust protects the assets from when your children or you inherit them. Creditors. Child gets into financial trouble, they cannot go after those assets that are inherited in the trust. Lawsuits. They get into a car accident, they're sued. These assets that are in the trust cannot be attached to that judgment. And divorce. So the claims of divorcing spouses. I hear the one thing I do hear all the time is, I love my, you know, daughter-in-law, my son-in-law, but I don't want them to get any of my money. You know, grandkids, fine, but I don't want them getting it. So it's important that we protect these assets. The opposite side of that is that I hear that trusts can be they're too restrictive. I don't want to put things in a trust because it's just going to be too, you know, restrictive. You can do specific instructions. So trusts are very customizable. You can say, my children only get a distribution from the trust if they maintain a full-time job, if they get a college degree, if they're buying their first house. You can build all of this into the trust so that it's not a free-for-all. They're not trust fund babies. They're having to actually meet these life goals in order to access the funds. Control can be given to a responsible family member or a corporate trustee. So if you don't feel like they are capable of being their own trustees, you can say until they're age 35, they have a co-trustee. But be careful with corporate trustees because it can erode because they're higher fees. I mean, you're paying an administrator to administrate that trust with your children. But it's one option. Just know that it's not too restrictive. How restrictive a trust is up to you. Okay. Now, this one. This is yet I guess singers are really stupid. Because this is another one who died. Her will left her 21-year-old daughter $2 million. Whitney Houston. Bobby Christina was 21 when Whitney died. She received a $2 million distribution. She died at 22. Had she lived, she would have gotten another $3 million at 25. And then $15 million when she turned 30. Outright. I mean, obviously, you see, it didn't work out well. Let's make a deal. If I walked up to you right now with a blank check and I said, I want to buy your business, how much do you have me write that check for?
I'll let you in.
Everybody has that figure. How did you come to that figure, though, is the question. Right now, we're going to talk about what to do with a buy-sell agreement. How many of you have a buy-sell? A buy-sell. How many have you a buy-sell agreement? A lot of people don't, because this is a very family business-centric industry, don't do buy-sells, but it's a business. And all a buy-sell is a legally binding document that tells who's going to buy the business and how much they're going to buy it for. Who can purchase the business? Is it only family members? Does family have first right of refusal? What is a fair price? How did we come to the value of the business? How are we going to value it? We can do it by appraisal. We can do it by just assigning a value and a growth rate. That can be a little dangerous. When is the sale going to occur? Is it only when I die? What if a family member who's an owner becomes disabled? Do we consider them disabled after they can't work for 6 consecutive months and therefore we get to buy them out? What if one wants to retire? And where are the funds going to come from? I can tell you I'm going to buy your business for $1 million. But I don't have it. What happens? If you are relying on that money at retirement or for your children at death? Okay, so here's what can happen without a buy-sell. Two brothers are in the business together. This one passes away, his wife inherits his interest in the business. Brother number two wants to buy her out, but she's holding out because she thinks it's worth a lot more and says, I'm not going to sell. You're in business with me now. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never worked a cow in my life, but I'm not giving it up because I feel like it's worth a lot more than you're willing to buy me out for. What's his situation? He can pay her the higher amount if he has the money, or he could be in business with his sister-in-law and have to hire somebody to replace his brother. This is probably a better scenario. We have a buy-sell now. The buy-sell says, when brother number one dies, she gets the business interest, but she has to sell it to the brother. And they were smart. They got $1.5 million on life insurance on the brothers. They each got it because we don't know who's going to die first. He dies. This gentleman is buying her out of the business, which is $1.75. He gives her $1.5 now, and the balance he pays out in a note. So here are all the things that an agreement should cover, and I think I brought a outline. First is, how are we going to determine the valuation? So let's say I say it's worth X, you say it's worth Y. Who's right? Well, we can build in the document that each person gets an appraisal, and then we can take the average of those two, or if our appraisers don't agree, we hire a third. I brought this out because this is the 8 pages of decisions that go into a buy-sell agreement. It covers you in almost every situation. Departure with and without notice. What does this mean? So we're in business together, and I decide one day, I've had enough, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Give me my money in the business. You now are without a partner. Somebody has left you high and dry. Do you pay them the same amount as somebody who gives you notice, time to replace them? The agreement can say, if I walk out, if I don't give at least 3 months notice, I'm going to take a 30% less value because I left you high and dry. It's a penalty. What if an owner becomes disabled? Again, you have to define disability. Are we willing to pay a worker who is disabled, unable to work, and keep them on the books? Or do we say, after 6 months, we're buying you out, and how are we going to buy you out? And how will a deadlock be broken? So Russian roulette, we each write down what we feel half of an interest of the business is, and the highest bidder has to either buy or sell at that amount. Sealed bid is exactly what it sounds like. We sit across from the table together, and we each put an envelope with our value in a sealed envelope, and whoever has the lowest bid, you're going to buy or sell the business. And then an equalization provision. So if I agree that you're going to buy me out over the next 10 years at $1 million, because that's what the property's worth, then 6 months down the road, they strike oil on the property, and it's worth 3 times that now. Is there an equalization provision in there that says at the 6-month mark or the 1-year mark, we're going to revalue this, and if it's above a 20% increase, I'm getting 20% more? I bought a business in 2013. We had a look-back provision, so 1 year later, if we had lost any clients, those were now removed from the note. So I wasn't paying for something that I wasn't receiving. So that's what an equalization provision is. And then, are shares transferable during lifetime? Am I allowed to gift my shares of the business to my children only at death, or can I do it during lifetime? And if I can do it, does it require the approval of the other owners? Do they have to tell me, yes, you can, no, you can't, so that we can prevent the shares from becoming diluted during our lifetime, or we can prevent from being in business now with my, you know, brother's son who I can't stand? All right, so now we have another bingo question. I don't remember which one this is, so let me take a look. So this civil rights leader, his children sued one another over wrongful appropriation of funds. Martin Luther King Jr. So his one son and daughter sued their brother because the brother would not open up the books and let them see what the actual accounting of the foundation and estate. And then he also went and tried to sell a right to Martin Luther King's image to DreamWorks without their approval. And so they went to court to battle over that. All right. Wheel of Fortune. Somebody was at the booth earlier asking about equalization. I've talked to a lot of ranchers where they have multiple children, but only one or maybe two are in the business. And I've talked to them that have none in the business as well. But this is how to prevent that, you know, what is fair versus what is equal? Is it fair that one child who has put in the sweat equity gets more than the other children, or do we want everybody to get the same amount? It's a personal decision, and I've heard it go both ways. Here we have the Ingalls. So we've got Charles and Laura over here on the left. Charles and his wife Caroline. Their daughters Laura, Mary, Carrie, and Charles. So they have a successful ranching operation. Laura lives on the ranch. She works in the business, down and dirty every day. Carrie and baby Charles. Carrie is in ballet. She wants to leave the ranch and move to the city. The other daughter does some of the work behind the scenes. Here are the Ingalls' assets. Land of $5.5 million. Equipment of $60,000. Cattle, $450,000. Their house of $350,000. Investments, $750,000. They do have an old life insurance policy that they took out when the kids were little for $200,000. Personal property of about $150,000 and vehicles of $100,000. If they go now and they want everyone to receive the exact same thing, here we have cattle and equipment being split between the two daughters that are in the business as well as the vehicles. Laura gets the house. She lives in it, so she's going to get it. We've got the other two splitting the non-business assets. They get investments, personal property, and they split in the life insurance. However, now what is the only asset that we have to equalize if they want the kids to all receive the same value, their inheritance to be equal? Land. Now Laura only gets $145,000. Mary gets 187, and the other two kids get 159 acres each. What are these two girls who need all of this acreage going to do on half of it? Do they have enough to run the business? What if these two kids go out and sell their land? Can they buy them out? It's equal, but is it fair? Now let's take a look at how we can do it a couple different ways. Here we have the land, equipment, cattle, vehicles all going here. Investments, life insurance, personal property, and vehicles going to the other two children. So we do, in this case, we don't care if it's equal. Now, one other way, and I've said there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat. Here we've put the land in an LLC, we've got the Ingalls Family LLC, and now we are gifting the shares of the LLC to the kids. They're getting less because they're getting other property. We've done that technique a lot. So if you have multiple children in the family, we can equalize with a couple different things. We can equalize by shifting assets. Some assets go to one kid. The other assets go to the ones that are in the business. Probably the least expensive way to do it is life insurance. Nobody likes life insurance. I hear people tell me they don't believe in it. I don't know how it exists. I'm here to tell you. It is probably the best way to leverage it. We can, and that way, the kids who are in the business receive the business. The kids who are not get life insurance proceeds. They get it estate tax-free. They get it income tax-free. But it's a personal decision. Like I said, we can shift assets around. The other thing is gifting during lifetime, putting it into an LLC, and as the kids meet these goals and objectives, they receive shares of the ranch. So they are receiving them as their putting in the equity, being rewarded the same way any other employee compensation would work. Okay, so last one on our bingo card. What actor's housekeeper sued his estate for $627,000 plus $2 million in punitive damages because she said he told her verbally that he would give her his house? The Godfather himself. His housekeeper sued the family. By the way, she did get $125,000 in the settlement. Not the $2 million she was looking for, not the house, but she got $125,000. So one of you should have a winning card. You do? Oh, excellent. So I'm going to, Georgie, will you get the gift basket? I'm just going to talk about a couple others before we go. James Gandolfini was Tony Soprano, very famous. He was worth about $70 million, but because of poor planning, his family paid $30 million in estate taxes. So do you know if your estate would be taxable? Has anyone gone through with you and shown what taxes would be due, how things pass? Michael Jackson, he went to the trouble of establishing several trusts, but he never put any property into the trust. He never redeeded or retitled any of the property into the trust. So it was all includable in his estate. And Heath Ledger, when he died with an old will that left everything to his siblings and his parents. And so his estate, which I think was around $70 million, went to his parents, and he unintentionally disinherited his two-year-old daughter. Now, his parents gave the money to his daughter, their granddaughter, but he should have had an updated will. So, questions? No one has.
Since tax laws change, once you set up an estate plan, mm-hmm. is it easy to alter that?
What you want is flexibility in the document. So,
can you repeat the question?
Yes. So what she's asking is, because there are estate tax law changes and there's always these changes, is it easy to update it as laws change? You shouldn't have to update it every time a law changes. So what we like to see is a will that has the option to fund the trust up to the exemption. We can partially fund it if we want to, or we don't have to fund it. What we've seen a lot of lately, and when we're reviewing old wills, are wills that force assets into a bypass trust. I don't want to force assets into a bypass trust. Especially if the exemption's $11 million and my estate is only $4 million, I've been forced to put 100% of my assets into a bypass trust. So you want an attorney that's going to build in flexibility in the documents so that no matter what the exemption amount is, we've got options and flexibility on whether or not to fund the trust. Now, the times that you are going to have to update it are the times where your wishes have changed.
Are you still going to cover the Price is Right, how to negotiate with a sibling that wants to cash out?
Did I not do that one? No.
That's what I came for.
for how to negotiate with a sibling? Yeah. Okay. So part of that's the buy-sell. Okay? Because the buy-sell is going to be your best bet on negotiating ahead of time. After death, negotiating a buyout becomes a little bit more it's more difficult. So probably the best thing is how are you valuing the asset? Are you using a licensed appraiser? Right now, put a buy sell in place. It takes the guessing out of the equation later. So basically what it says is when our parents die, here is how we're going to value it. And if I want to buy you out, here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to give you 10% up, you know, as a down payment, and I'm going to pay the rest over 10 years. It takes the bite out of that purchase, and it takes the negotiation out of it.
You have an estate that has land in it. You have four siblings, four children. What often happens what's going to happen here is the one child that wants it, the other three want to cash out. The one that wants it is not going to be able to come up with that money.
Right. We can use life insurance.
That's what I was, that's what
it's going to be your cheapest bet because it's going to be the only thing that's going to give you about a 3x leverage for your dollar. So you're paying 30 cents on the dollar in order to, for the other kids to give up any right to it. So one child gets it, the other kids get, you know, life insurance.
So the one child takes a life insurance policy out on the parent?
On the parents.
And the value of that life insurance covers the land he's got to purchase from them?
Yes. It can cover the whole purchase price. It can cover part of the purchase price. It's up to you.
That was part of my question, and how do you use the life insurance product to accomplish this goal? So go a step further. Who actually owns the policy and who's paying for it?
Okay, so
before you cash it in.
Yes. Here, this is important because this is another thing I see a lot of times is that life insurance is owned in the estate. If it's not owned by an irrevocable life insurance trust, it's includable in your estate, and it could make you pay higher estate taxes. So typically we'll have it owned by a trust and payable to a trust. There's a document in place that says, buy sell, that says, I am going to, as the person who inherited the land, pay you X amount. So the trust distributes the life insurance proceeds to the buyer, or the trust can distribute it to the other children, and they just never get the land. The land goes by your will to one child, and the life insurance via the life insurance trust, those proceeds go to the other children. So those are two different ways you can do it. I mean, if it were me personally, if I knew that the one child is going to want the land, I would will the land to that child, and I would just have the other children receive the life insurance proceeds direct. So that there isn't a buyer or a sale. They're just getting different assets. No? Well, I thank you all for listening to me today. I hope you found something of value in it. We are downstairs in booth 833, because I know a lot of times it's hard to talk about personal family matters in a public setting like this. So if there are specific questions or scenarios you want to go through, come by our booth and give us, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to help you out.
We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back in this room at 3:30 for a leasing, negotiating and drafting grazing leases.